Welcome to another episode of the SaaS Podcast. I'm your host, Omar Khan, and this is a show where I interview proven founders and industry experts who share their stories, strategies, and insights to help you build, launch, and grow your SaaS business. In this episode, I talk to Thomas Cotreau, the co-founder and CEO of SiteCall, a cloud-based platform that helps enterprises provide remote visual support for complex customer issues. In 2008, Thomas was working as a telecom engineer when he and his friend had an idea. They wanted to create a solution that could bridge the gap between the world of telecommunications and the internet. So they started working on what would eventually become SiteCall, spending their evenings in his friend's basement to bring their vision to life. They bootstrapped the company for 3 years, creating a prototype in just 4 months. However, building a scalable, enterprise-ready platform they could sell took 5 challenging years. In 2012, Thomas started showing up at the Salesforce office in San Francisco every week, determined to get a meeting. Despite facing repeated rejections, he persisted until he finally secured the meeting he was after. Their prototype and unique approach impressed the Salesforce team, which led to a pivotal partnership that helped them land HP as their first major customer. Using SiteCall, HP could remotely guide customers through printer issues, fixing problems without dispatching technicians or handling returns, which saved them millions in product returns. But getting to this point was no easy feat. It took years of hard work, constantly improving the product and never giving up. And even after landing HP, it was just the beginning of the challenges they would face. As SiteCall grew, they encountered numerous obstacles. Legal issues forced them to rebrand, sales and marketing teams were clashing, and the pressure to scale rapidly intensified after they raised significant funding. Today, SiteCall is an 8-figure ARR business, serving hundreds of global enterprise customers with a team of about 100 people, and they've raised $54 million to date. In this episode, you'll learn how Thomas and his co-founder identified a gap in the market and built a product to bridge the gap between telecom and software, how partnerships with major companies like Salesforce help SiteCall land key customers and drive significant growth in the early stages, the challenges SiteCall faced when forced to rebrand due to legal issues, and how they turned it into an opportunity for improvement. We talk about why raising substantial funding can create intense pressure to grow quickly and how to manage the challenges that come with it, and how Thomas takes care of his mental and physical well-being as a founder and the importance of having ways to manage stress. So I hope you enjoy. Are you looking to sell your online business or buy one to start your entrepreneurial journey? Discover exciting opportunities with Bupos.com. Bupos is the number one platform for buying and selling profitable online businesses and the first to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers. At Bupos.com, you can explore their exclusive listings, browse listings from other marketplaces, or submit your own deal for approval. Bupos can offer pre-approved financing for recurring revenue businesses, allowing you to access fast funding with no personal guarantees. And their experienced M&A advisory team supports you every step of the way. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/Bupos. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to sell your business or find your next deal. Is your team struggling with spreadsheets that can't keep up with your workflows? It's time to switch to Jotform Tables. Jotform Tables is an all-in-one workspace that lets you collect, organize, and manage data seamlessly. Not only can you create online forms to gather data directly in Jotform Tables, but it also serves as a powerful tool to manage and analyze the data collected from your existing Jotform forms. You can also import spreadsheets or enter information manually, and all your data is stored securely in one place. Jotform Tables makes collaboration a breeze. You can share your tables with a single click and work with your team in real time. Say goodbye to version control issues and hello to efficient teamwork. Get started with Jotform Tables for free today at sasclub.io/jotform. That's sasclub.io/jotform. Hey there, SaaS founders. Are you looking to grow your B2B SaaS business to the first million in annual recurring revenue? I've got something that can help you. Introducing the SaaS Club newsletter, your weekly source of proven strategies, practical insights, and exclusive interviews with successful B2B SaaS founders who've been in your shoes and are ready to share what they've learned. Each week, you'll get a quick 5-minute read delivered straight to your inbox, full of growth tactics, lessons learned, and insider tips to help you tackle those early stage challenges and grow your business to seven figures and beyond. So what are you waiting for? Head over to saasclub.io/newsletter and join over 4,000 other SaaS founders and entrepreneurs who are already using these insights to grow their businesses. Subscribe to the SaaS Club newsletter today and get the support you need to keep moving forward on your SaaS journey. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Hi, Omer.
So do you have a favorite quote? Something that inspires or motivates you that you can share with us?
Yes, absolutely. The one that I really like is one image is worth a thousand words.
Why? Why is that important to you?
Because that's kind of the fundamental sentence that I use to build Cycle, right? So we are in a world where today there's too many what I call blind communications, where you try to explain, you know, what's going on, what is in front of you, what's your problem, where it should be so much easier if you could show this one picture, right, and collaborate with vision rather than, again, just text or words. So really like this sentence, and I think it's absolutely true. Try to describe, you know, any type of image. It will really require over 1,000 words.
So tell us about Cycle. What does the product do? Who's it for? And what's the main problem you're helping to solve?
Yeah, we are a cloud software. So what we deliver is an enterprise solution to help see, analyze, and guide remotely. So what does it mean? It means that in a lot of different service circumstances, which can be customer service or field service, you have some tasks to be done remotely. And rather than having just, again, this text or voice communication, we bring vision into the process. So typically, for example, you have a problem with your coffee machine or your washing machine. You contact the vendor and they will send you a link to your smartphone. You click on the link. It starts the back camera of your phone, and you can show, you know, what the problem is. And the remote customer service agent has some augmented reality to explain you what to do and which part to remove, what to zoom in, and really guide you to the reparation process. Or even if you cannot repair it, for example, identify which part needs to be replaced and kind of lead you to the right troubleshooting through this visual component that is provided by Cycle.
So if I understood this correctly, like if I was using a company that was providing support through Cycle, let's say maybe the ice maker in my freezer has broken, and this person, I'm showing them with my camera, my phone, the ice maker, and with the AR, that would actually let me see as well, like specific, you know, like if they're talking about a specific part of that mechanism, the AR kind of highlights that, and I can see that too as a customer in terms of, oh, that's the thing he's talking about.
Exactly. So think about it as a two-way collaboration. On one side, there's this customer service agent who, you know, usually would sit in a contact center, and Cycle is integrated with all of these cloud contact center solutions on the CRM solution that it would use. So just by one click, they would see the, you know, the streaming of your camera directly into their contact center solution. And they have some advanced command that they can use through Cycle, yes, to guide you on your phone. So directly over your phone, that's where you're going to see this augmentation. So for example, if they ask you to remove this part of the ice maker, then they can, you know, put a screwdriver and show you that the screwdriver should go there. And that's the one thing that you need to remove there to get it out. So it's really all of this, you know, visual guidance that they can provide to you as, you know, the end customer there directly on your phone.
Yeah, love it. Who are your customers? Who are some of the companies that are using Cycle today?
So we have around 200 enterprise customers. Usually it's, you know, global organization, very big brands, you know, from manufacturing in field service, we have companies like GE Healthcare, right, that would use SACL every day when they have a problem for the maintenance or installation on this MRI machine in the hospital. It can be also more consumer service brands, like you mentioned your fridge with this ice maker. If you have a Whirlpool, they use SACL every day to help customers fix problems remotely there.
And can you give us a sense of the size of the business? Where are you in terms of revenue, size of team, and so on?
So think about it this way, 200 global enterprise customers, 100 people in the team. We don't disclose our revenue, but we are in the eight-digit numbers. And it's really a global organization. That's one of our characteristics as well. So I'm based here in the San Francisco Bay Area, where our headquarters is. But I started the company in France. We have teams on the offices, you know, from Boston to London to Germany, up to Singapore. So we really, you know, deliver this service at scale for a large organization. And also, what's very important in the way we build this platform is the fact that it can deliver a high quality service for people all over the globe. So typically, you know, the contact center that you are reaching out to, even if you're here in the US, can be in the Philippines. So it's very important that the connectivity and the optimization that we've built here across this global platform can provide this high quality of service between the Philippines and where you are right now.
Cool. Okay, so let's go back to 2008. You're in Paris when you founded this business. And for the first 3 years, you didn't raise any money. You bootstrapped the business. So firstly, where did the idea for this come from?
So where the idea came from, I'm a telecommunication engineer, you know, studied telecommunication and started my career at UUNET. So UUNET was at this time, at the end of the 90s, the biggest internet service provider in the world. We were literally building the infrastructure of the internet and carrying over 40% of the world internet traffic globally. So we were really the internet pioneers, had the chance to even work with some of the founders of the internet. Very, technical team, building all of the infrastructure. I was leading Southern Europe engineering group there. And we were working with all of the European team as well as the US team on continuing all of this expansion at a time where the bandwidth requirements were so high that we had to literally double the size of the network every 3 months. So it was really a race of building, changing all of the technology, finding the new solutions to be able to continue to deliver the service that everybody was discovering. So that was really a kind of a very intense time up to the dot-com. And I was, you know, at UUNET during the dot-coms and the very exciting time as well. We saw the internet traffic literally exploding. And then a couple of years in a row, we were acquired by MCI WorldCom. So if you remember, MCI WorldCom was a very large telco. On they acquired UUNET to make UUNET their new internet arm. And it was a cultural shock when we were acquired because we were the internet guys and, you know, our life was internet. We're going at lightning speed and we're, you know, working night and days on building all of this cool technology where MCI WorldCom was a very typical telco, where everything was siloed, segmented. That was kind of a new world where they say, all right, now you're going to have to work this way. You're going to have to get big project. I remember even one of the first big project that my new boss asked me to work on was to merge the data network of MCI WorldCom with UUNET. you know, we worked on it and say, okay, it's going to be a 2-year project. So take your team, work on that, get it done, show me the progress. Came back less than 6 months later, it was done. And, you know, when I showed the result, he said, no, that's not possible. I said, well, it's done. It's here. And I still remember this feedback that was, oh, you guys have to slow down. Which was really, you know, at this time for me to say, oh, I think there's a problem there, right? There's a serious cultural shock. I think that's the other way, that you guys have to understand that the internet is going to go way faster and we will not slow down, but you guys have to speed up. And then, you know, I took other project that was interesting, that was at the beginning of voice over IP, out of the communication going through the internet. I worked a lot on the, you know, launching two project, new project there, until the time where we went Chapter 11. So MCR WorldCom was one of the, I think still today, one of the three biggest fraud in history. And our CEO went to jail and everything froze, right? When you're in Chapter 11, I didn't even know what Chapter 11 was. I was in Paris. I saw that in the news. Say, okay, what is, then you Google it, what is Chapter 11? So, and then, you know, getting through all of this, we thought with some of my teammates that it was time to change the dynamic there, to kind of build a new type of infrastructure that could deliver real-time communication services to the world without being kind of trapped in a telco type of behavior. And at this time, I was still missing some experience, right? Because I was really in tech and the deep engineering. I never grew up, you know, a business. So I joined the CEO of an interesting company that was based in France, who was providing software development and consulting for telcos and enterprise. Small company at this time, you know, around 40 people. And I knew the CEO, and he told me, you know, I told him my story and say, well, I want to learn business, right? Because my goal is to start my own company, and I missed this part. It was great. He said, all right, take your first sales guy and go for it. So we had a good 5 years there that I spent with them. And literally we grew from 40 people to 450 people. Company was cash positive, great success, learned a lot. And then came the time where I thought, okay, I've learned enough now. And I can go back to this initial idea that we've had to transform the communication world with technology. And I started to work with one of my friends from school who worked with me at UUNET on MCR WorldCom. We started to design, you know, the platform on what it should be and how it should work, literally in his basement every night. Until, you know, we had the true pillars that were designed. One of them was the fact that we absolutely wanted to be fully virtualized. Where, think about it, you know, in 2007, right, where you could not do any enterprise communication without deploying a lot of hardware, right? So we didn't want any hardware dependency. So we thought it will be a software play. We're going to virtualize out of the real-time communication world. The second one was more about the fact that now that we were virtualized on the internet, we did not have any more silos or barriers between the media, where, you know, with a telco, you have a voice channel that is connected on, it's only voice. You have then a text, it's only text. Or there was a revolution when they introduced MMS on top of SMS, where you can maybe send a picture in your text message. Wonderful. Thank you. Took them 5 years.
I remember when that was a big deal, the MMS communication.
But that was done, you know, the telco way again. 5 years, massive, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars investment, etc., to do it. Where on the internet, we could do it immediately.
So I'm curious that as you were thinking about designing this business, did you know, were you already clear about the product in terms of what Sitecall was going to become, or was this more about, we want to build a business, we know it's in this space, this is the kind of problem we want to solve? Like, how much clarity do you have about exactly what that idea was going to be at that point?
It was not 100% clear, right, on the exact problem that we would solve in the future. What was clear is that we were bridging a big technology gap between telecommunication and software. On how to use it, on how to, what our go-to-market would be, that was actually the third pillar that we've designed, where we thought that our go-to-market should start by API. So it's very, engineering style, where we thought, hey, let's provide a platform that can connect with all of the other enterprise software solution to deliver these capabilities to the enterprise through them, with them. So that's why our go-to-market was, we've got all of these features, all of these capabilities, now that we broke all of the barriers between all of these media, all of these things, we can aggregate on. That was the beginning, where we say, hey, why not adding, you know, video on top of voice with screen sharing, but any type of data. And that's where we started to play with augmented reality, with a lot of things that we can also use through the same channel, because we did not have any constraint anymore. So that was more of a discovery of everything we could do, not that we unleash all of these capabilities. But to be honest with you, I was not 100% clear on the exact problem that we would solve for the enterprise market at the end.
Yeah, I mean, as I hear you talking about it, it definitely sounds like a very techie approach, that we have this great technology, we can make this technology better, and let's find a problem that this technology will solve, as opposed to, you know, what we hear about these days in the lean startup stuff about talk to customers, find a problem, and then build a solution. You guys were very solution-driven, looking for the problem, right? Are you an entrepreneur looking to buy a profitable online business, or a founder ready to sell? Bupos is the number one platform for buying and selling profitable online businesses. With their exclusive listings, as well as listings from other marketplaces, and the option to submit your own deal for approval, Bupos has you covered. Plus, they're the first to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers of recurring revenue businesses, allowing you to access fast funding without personal guarantees. And their experienced M&A advisory team supports you every step of the way. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/Bupos. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to start your entrepreneurial journey, or sell your business at the right valuation with Bupos.com.
Yes, we were very solution-driven. In terms of the problem, we knew a lot of problem, because out of these enterprise, and again, we're focused on enterprise since day one, and that's kind of my world. I've never done any solution for consumers. So we knew that everybody was struggling with, you know, getting enterprise product that can make all of these collaboration features with all of the visual component as part of it available through their software ecosystem, in their infrastructure, without having to, you know, deploy massive equipment in there, etc. So that was a true problem that everybody was facing, but the value of it, the exact, you know, model on use case, you know, on the day-to-day that when I gave you the example with your ice maker, no, it was not clear back in the day.
Yeah. Okay. So what I want to try to figure out is like you're bootstrapping the business. So you don't have, you know, unlimited funds or millions of dollars to go and invest in this business. You're targeting enterprise, which means it's not, you know, a weekend minimum viable product that you're going to go and sell to somebody on Monday. How did you get started? What was that first version of the product? How long did it take you to build? But more importantly, like, how long did it take for you to find that exact problem that you were going to go and solve?
It took us literally 4 months to get a prototype that worked, where we could, you know, demo our vision through software. The hard part of it was to build a true platform that would scale globally and that is enterprise ready. And that took us 5 years. So I did not anticipate 5 years, right? Which is a big gap between 4 months and 5 years, as you can imagine, of your life. It's not the same story. So why did it take so much time? It's because there were so many, you know, changes that we had to overcome to make the right solution for the enterprise market. And we were really combining these two worlds, the telecommunication and the software, that did not communicate together, that did not work together in the past. And so we hired some telecommunication engineers, some software developers, get them on the same, you know, deck, on working on the, you know, in the same office every day. And even after several years, they were still not speaking the same language. So it, just to highlight the big, you know, gap between these two industries that we were bridging. That was painful, was long. So after 3 years of building the platform, we had, you know, first POCs here and there on trying to test the market to see how to deliver our product. And that's where we raised our seed round of funding.
And when you got to that seed stage, had you clearly defined the problem now, like in terms of this is, you know, the site core product that you told us about earlier?
We had some good ideas, as you do in seed. You know, you have a good PowerPoint and you explain all of the problem that you could solve on the few POCs that are ongoing. We started, you know, we used a banker to find, you know, some investors back in Paris. And, you know, after a couple of months, the banker told us that there was no response and it was not ready and didn't find any investors. So I was a bit upset with that. So I asked the banker to let us do it by ourselves. And we've got it. Reach to a first investor there directly. There's a fun story there. I hope this investor would not be mad if I share it with you. But I reached out to this guy I identified at kind of one of the biggest funds in France. The one guy that I saw had the perfect profile investing in software, in tech, and also having some understanding of the telecommunication background. So he was that's the one guy I want to speak to, this one. And even went through the same engineering school as we've been through before, working in New York, in the stock exchange of this stuff. So I dropped him an email, no answer, two email, no answer, three email, no answer. So maybe after the number four or five, I sent the last one and said, all right. I was not, and it was not a nice email. I literally was very pissed. I say, you kind of a prick, right? You could even answer my email on that. That sucks. We've shared the same background. You could even, you know, even if you're not interested in investing, we could go grab a beer. And that would just be the right thing to do as a human, right? So literally 5 minutes after he responded, say, oh no, I'm sorry. So it really worked. He told me we made a lot of fun about the story after, because he invested in the company. He told me, I was really not used to receive this kind of email.
Yeah, don't try that at home. It doesn't always work.
No. I cannot give that as a recommendation for everyone, but this time it worked.
So 3 years you've been building this product. You get to the seed round, but even at that point, you don't really have, it's a prototype. You don't have a fully functioning product. You don't have any customers yet. What happens? How much money did you raise in the seed round, and then how did things change?
So we raised 1 million euros. And the expectation was to launch the product and find our market. So it took us maybe another year to get everything lined up on the platform ready. And then started to test the product with different prospects, large companies, large software vendors, to see their reaction. And that's where something interesting happened. I pitched the product to Oracle in Paris, and they found it very interesting. I did not know why at this time, but I knew after that the person I pitched it to literally received 2 weeks before kind of a study from his team that explained that in the state of the art of the technology at this time, what we've done was not possible. So they asked me to go to meet with the team in the US. And that's where I started, the back and forward between the Silicon Valley and Paris. On seeing, their reaction, I thought, hey, I should try with the other vendors in the Bay Area. So I started to go and meet with the other ones. And I had also some very, very positive feedback on that, where the decision was made in 2013. Well, that was at the end of 2012, that I would move to the US to launch the product from here. It was kind of a big bet. Say, hey, our go-to-market is going to be with the large enterprise software vendors to provide the video assistance capability on top of the platform to their customers. And so that's where, I moved with my family. I have my wife and two kids, and we moved to the Bay Area in 2013 and launched the product from there.
Tell me about your first customer. Who was that, and how did you land that first customer?
So we started with one or two small ones, but the first big one was actually at this time the biggest Salesforce customer, and we've signed it with Salesforce, which was HP. And HP with the printer division of HP. So, HP was the number one Salesforce customer. They have these executive meetings where they share their strategy, their problem, where they would like to get some improvement to be done. And they shared this problem with Salesforce that was literally every year between 20 and 30% of the printers that our customer would ship back to them, because from the customer's perspective, they did not work. When they test them, they would work. Or have a very simple problem like a paper jam. So this, imagine we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of waste, right? In terms of product return, refurbishment, test, providing a new printer to the customer, total mess. When they shared that with Salesforce, that's where they say, well, maybe let's bring, you know, our partner at Sitecall in the loop. We joined, you know, the meeting, and we shared what we could do, and they decided to move forward, and we deployed Sitecall in Salesforce Service Cloud into their contact center in different countries, from India to Philippines to LATAM, and to provide this, well, I would say to empower the customer service agent to not only try to understand what the problem is, but also to see and guide the customer to its resolution and avoid a product return. It was a blast. It worked very well. And it really, you know, opened up doors to others. And that was kind of the beginning of the success there.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, HP, great logo to get early on. What I'm curious about is, like, how did you become a Salesforce partner in the first place?
That's a good question. I think by getting into their office every week.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. It's, you know, I moved to the Bay Area for one reason, because I wanted to work with these guys. You know, I was committed to it. I said, all right. They didn't have the big Salesforce Tower yet. You know, it was not here here in San Francisco, but they had big office, you know, in one market. Every week, yeah. I found, you know, a couple of guys that I met, asked to introduce to others, and blah, blah, blah. Every week I was there until I had this, you know, presentation here in front of the team at Service Cloud, who really saw the interest and who even shared with me after that the demo that I showed them was something that they would even present at Dreamforce the same year. But as they didn't find a product that could do it in the cloud, they would hide some video equipment under the desk to make it a big show, as if everything was in the cloud, which it was not, because again, they didn't have a solution. And when I showed them that the solution was there, then they say, oh shit, actually there's one. That's how the kind of the partnership started. But they didn't, you know, very different from, you know, this seed round story where it's all about slides. Here, it's all about something that really works. You know, remember after this meeting with Service Cloud at Salesforce, they asked me for an API key on the same day. I even received an email by midnight the same day from this guy, lead product engineer there. Send me an email and say, okay, I tested everything. It works as you said. I don't believe it. Come to my office tomorrow.
So it was that persistence of just not giving up, continuing to basically get in to, as you know, whoever you could talk to at Salesforce. And I think it was a combination of that persistence and obviously the technology that you guys had built, something that, you know, everybody else thought, you know, the technology wasn't there yet to be able to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. This, 5 years of hard work. And trust me, we are not playing golf. We're paying because, yeah, behind the, you know, the nice pitch, it was a true, you know, robust enterprise platform that was delivering this promise.
Great. So, after all of this years of persistence, you've built the product, you have got this deal with HP, this partnership with Salesforce. The business at the time was called Wemo, not Sitecall. And then you got a nice, not so friendly letter.
Yeah, that's... you know, this letter is part of what I call my welcome to the US, where in Europe, I did not have any problem with Wemo. And even before moving to the US, we did a little bit of research on the name. And we asked, you know, if it was okay to trademark this brand in the US, and there was no problem. So that's what we've done, and we started to operate with the name Wemo. I received this very aggressive letter from a lawyer that literally explained me that if I did not change my name within the upcoming 2 weeks, they would, you know, drag me to court and going to be in very tough situation. And it was from a very large company that Wemo is the name of one of their products. It's not the name of the company, but one of the product is named Wemo. It was written differently. We had W-E-E-M-O and they are W-E-M-O. But they didn't like it though. So we went through a couple of discussions. Kind of to cool down the situation and to give me more time to change the name, I asked them if they would, you know, be okay if I was Wemo in Europe, which they said, no, absolutely not. We will sue them, you there. Well, to which I told them that, you know, I'm from there. I know everybody there. And by the way, my brand was trademarked before their brand up there. And so I would wait for them and welcome them to kick their ass in Europe. So we ended up into a trade-off saying, So they did some research. They say, maybe it's going to be tough in Europe.
So you had the French French trademark for Wemo.
Yes. Oh yeah, the European one was covered. Yeah. So we went to kind of this trade-off where they said, anyway, we will not let you operate Wemo in the US. It's going to be a pain in the ass for you. Maybe you're stronger in Europe, but it's going to be a pain as well. We agreed that they would give me 1 year to transition, take another name and get there. And I think that was the best thing to do. You know, when you are focused in growing a very small company at this time, you don't want to spend your energy into getting into this type of process there, right? So that's why with the board, we, even if it was a bit painful, all right, let's rebrand everything. Let's find a new name that really, now that we know exactly what our go-to-market is, that can also, you know, be a bit more clear about this ability to see and guide remotely, which is Sitecore, right?
Okay. And then so for the next couple of years, you were using partnerships, as we talked about with Salesforce and HP, as a way to grow, land new customers. And I think it was in 2015, you were able to raise your Series A, which is about $8.5 million, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you and I were talking about this, you said, you know, fundraising is one of those really hard moments. I said, yeah, you know, and I was like expecting to hear the same thing about, you know, what you said earlier, like can't get investors attention or time with them, or it was really difficult to get the money and all of this stuff. And you said, actually, it was the day after I raised my Series A round that was really hard. Can you explain that?
Yes. So just to put things in context, we were growing fast, right? Since, you know, 2013, when I moved here, 2014, you know, we signed HP and we were really, growing the business, finding new customers here and there, signing new partnership. We haven't had an ad on TV in France with a company named Darty. That's the French Best Buy, right? Who thought that, it was a wonderful idea to help their customer to typically troubleshoot any type of problem with their home appliances and provide this type of remote support. And they made a very funny ad, because obviously the one question everybody has is, but what if, you know, through the camera you would see someone in a situation that you would not like to see, right? They made this ad where actually they the wife was in video call with Darty, asking questions about where to install the new washing machine. And she would go in the bathroom, and obviously the husband would get out of the shower naked. I'm going through the camera at this time. So it created some buzz. I think it was great. Also, you know, good way to get around some of the fear that some brands could have, right, with using video. So we're going well. We're growing nicely. So that's why it was kind of time to raise our Series A. And Series A is all about scale, right? Scaling sales and marketing to grow the organization. So we've raised this round, 8.4 million. It led to a lot of expectation from our investors, right? On us, say, all right, now let's compress time. Instead of growing the way you do, you have this kind of pressure that comes on you. We say, all right, I cannot, you know, I raised this, you know, over 8 million. It's not to continue as I was doing, right? The reason why this guy believe in our ability to scale is because we're going to have to change everything and go way faster. That's what I started to do. I think the speed would hit me there on trying to change everything in an organization that was going well was sort of a hard time. Then that's where, you know, you went from a place where everybody was really, really focused, working together, building together as one team, into a company where you see new management coming, creating some silos. And it even led me to a war. I call it a war because it was really the first time I hired a CMO who came into a company, great guy, did a lot of things, grew nice companies. And then, you know, he had all of his ideas. And one of them was the fact that we should sell online. Obviously, our sales guys, enterprise sales guys, did not like that. Even make our pricing, you know, public on of the things where they rather work with our customers, you know, to build the right business case that map to their organization and their needs. The war started to happen. And I even had to take a hard decision to say, all right, so how do I fix that? And I had to decide to cut the marketing side because my sales were the guys, the ones selling. And then obviously during this time, you know, it creates some hiccups in the organization, the speed. And instead of, you know, really accelerating at this time, actually you slow down a bit because you lose your focus.
When you say sales and marketing went to war, what did that look like? I mean, it's not uncommon for there to be, you know, some conflict between a sales and marketing org, but when you use the word war, it's like, how bad did it get?
I trusted my sales and I trusted my marketing, right? And I was kind of in between. And even the you know, I wanted to let the marketing try, you know, their idea. So they made our pricing, you know, available online. Literally, a couple of weeks later, someone reached out through our website, incoming request from a Fortune 100 company. Right? So then I had one of my sales guy who started to discuss, you know, the opportunity with this person, you know, the way we would start and build a model with them. And the person replied, no, I just want one license to test. Well, imagine now the salesperson, we say, okay, I've got a big lead. I can work with this company. We can help them, you know. And now it turns into, you know, this one person from a Fortune 100 company who says that he wants to buy one license. So that really created this, you know, big tension there, where I say, okay, all right, it's going to be bad.
You said to me that every round that you've raised has created some kind of challenge or pressure. You raised a Series B in, I think it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Well, what was the challenge there?
It was kind of the same story. Not with marketing this time, but with kind of scaling the organization again to go faster. Same pressure, right? We raised this time 42 million. So you increase the level of pressure, right? The more money, the more pressure. And then think, okay, how then do I scale the organization, you know, to go to a much bigger company? That's where you, again, start to bring new, highly experienced people who did it multiple times over their life time, and that can bring this expertise, right? Because you want to, again, get very strong people with you who've done it already in the past, so that they help you find the path to this to this growth and to scale. And yeah, again, one more time, I did not go into a war this time, but I also had this kind of you know, tension or creation of silos, on beginning of, you know, political discussion, everything you don't want in a startup, right? A startup, it's all about speed. It's all about you know, the flexibility that we have that the large organization cannot have. We have to be able, you know, to be smart enough to navigate in complex situation, to find the right path to get there, and to evolve in permanent. Right, permanently, because in the cloud, as you know, in SaaS software, it's not a one-time purchase. You buy a service, and the service is evolving every day. And if you want to keep your customer with having good, you know, customer stickiness, you have to continue to provide new features, new capability, continue to lead the market, continue to differentiate. So this. Again, there's a momentum to keep in there, that where you really don't want to go into the path of being a big company.
It's kind of funny, like when you told the story earlier about your manager saying, go and take 2 years to go and do this project, and you come back in 6 months, and you know, they weren't moving fast enough. And then now suddenly you're in a position where every time you raise money, they're telling you now that you're not moving fast enough. But every time you go and spend the money, it actually slows things down, at least for a while, when you, you know, bring new people in, or the dynamics change, or of the organization. It's a side of fundraising that I think often, like personally, I don't hear about. You know, we hear about the struggles of raising the money and so on. But less so much about, hey, here are all the problems that got created once I'd raised the money, that actually, you know, to be able to go and do what I needed to do.
Yeah, I find it harder after the fundraising than to get the fundraising by itself. That's a uncommon interesting fact. But I'm sure that you know, if you question other CEOs who can share honestly, you know, the complexity of this post fundraising. I think that's a true topic.
Yeah. All right. We'd love to keep chatting, but we should wrap up. So I'm going to get onto the lightning round. I've got 7 quick fire questions for you. So just try to answer them as quickly as you can.
Okay.
What's one of the best pieces of business advice you've received?
When I started the company, one of my advisors told me, hey, keep in mind that it's going to be a marathon, not a sprint. And I keep this one here, and I'm glad that I didn't, you know, run it as a sprint, because I would have died before.
What book would you recommend to our audience, and why?
Well, there's one book I think every CEO should or should not read, which is Hard Things About Hard Things from Ben Horowitz. And the reason why is because literally, if you want to know more about my story with this book, it's everything, all of the pain that is described in there, I had to go through, I think, all of them.
I know we're in the lightning round, but you have to just tell us very quickly what you told me about the halfway through the book and saying, okay, I just read about my past. Do I want to now? Just tell us that.
Yes, that was really really scary when I was maybe had the book on where I say, okay, no, that's exactly where I'm at now. On thinking about it, that it was so true, you know, that all of these stories that are highlighted in this book, you know, I had to go through all of these, you know, hurdles on point. I said, do I really want to know the future? Because if I read that and if it, you know, would it help me or would it destroy me? So to be honest with you, I continued to read a couple of chapters and I stopped. So I never went up to the end of the book yet, but I will.
Yeah, when you retire, you can go back and take a look at the book. What's one attribute or characteristic in your mind of a successful founder?
I will give you one French expression. And in French, it's être droit dans ses bottes. So literally, it means being straight in your boots. So what it means behind is someone that would stand by their principle, their value, or their ideas, and would not change their mind, right? And I think that's very important because you're going to get so much, you know, influence. People want you to think differently, to do things differently, etc. That if you are not crisp on straight into your ideas on where you want to go, you will never get there.
What is your favorite personal productivity tool or habit?
It's riding my bike.
What's a new or crazy business idea you'd love to pursue if you had the time?
A crazy business idea would be to use a solution like Cycle within the gig economy. I would love to empower anyone to be tasked and guided remotely by someone who knows, either someone who knows or even AI, right? To help them perform tasks that they thought they could never do or that were not trained on.
That's a super interesting idea, actually. Especially because the gig economy is just kind of, you know, continuing to kind of explode in many ways. What's an interesting or fun fact about you that most people don't know?
Well, now they will know it, but when I grew up, when I was a kid, my parents moved literally in a barn in the mountains where you could not keep, what they tell me, I was young, that you could not even keep a candle burning because the walls were just wood planks where the wind would go through, and it was kind of wild.
Wow. And finally, what's one of your most important passions outside of your work?
It's, I would say, mountain biking. Any type of outdoor activity, again, saved my life because it's this combination of getting out, you know, refreshing your mind. And also what I love in mountain biking is that it's a very, very complete, you know, experience on sport where it goes from, you know, a lot of effort to go up the hill, right? And I like to say no pain, no reward. And then it can be very, very, very technical in the downhill. Use your brain. You have to calculate everything. You have to be very crisp on the, you know, on every movement and everything you do. There's a lot of fun. Adrenaline is there. Good amount of risk as well, right? When you go into big rocks or this kind of stuff. So everything I like.
That's awesome. Awesome. Thomas, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure to chat and go through your story of building this business since 2008. It's been quite a journey so far. If people want to check out SiteCall, they can go to sitecall.com. And if folks want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, you can reach out to me by email, thomas@sitecall.com, and I will respond.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you and the team the best of success.
Thank you, Omar.
Cheers. Are you still wrestling with rigid spreadsheets that slow down your team? Jotform Tables is a solution you've been looking for. Jotform Tables combines the power of a spreadsheet with the flexibility of a database. You can collect your data through customizable online forms, and Jotform Tables automatically organizes and stores all the data submitted through your Jotform forms. You can also import and export files and collaborate with your team effortlessly. All changes are synced in real time, so everyone is always on the same page. But Jotform Tables is more than just a spreadsheet alternative. With conditional formatting, data visualization, and more than 250 integrations, it's a complete productivity platform for your team. You can even automate tasks and workflows to save time. Ready to centralize your data, boost your team's efficiency, and take your productivity to new heights? Sign up for free at sasclub.io/jotform. That's sasclub.io/jotform. Do you dream of owning a profitable online business, or are you looking to sell yours? Bupost.com is the number one platform for entrepreneurs and founders alike. With Bupost, you can discover exclusive listings, browse listings from other marketplaces, or submit your own deal for approval. As the first platform to offer built-in acquisition financing for qualified buyers, Bupost makes it easier than ever to acquire a recurring revenue business without personal guarantees. Their experienced M&A advisory team is dedicated to supporting you throughout the process, ensuring a smooth transaction. Don't miss out on this exciting opportunity. To learn more, visit sasclub.io/bupos. That's sasclub.io/BOOPOS. Sign up today and get qualified to sell your business or find your next venture. Hey, are you struggling to grow your SaaS business? Well, you're not alone. But the good news is you don't have to settle for slow growth. The right tools can be a growth game changer. And that's where the SaaS Toolkit comes in. This free guide cuts through the noise and shows you the 12 essential types of tools successful SaaS startups have used to get to seven figures and beyond. It gives you specific examples and makes practical recommendations to help you find the perfect growth tools for your needs. So stop feeling stuck. Visit thesaastoolkit.com to download your free copy and unlock the growth potential you've been missing. That's thesaastoolkit.com.